One of the most popular law enforcers in America is a fictional character. Walt Longmire, the sheriff of fictional Absaroka County, Wyoming, has delighted readers and TV viewers for several years now. Longmire is the main character in more than 10 novels, and a TV show based on the books moves this year from A&E on cable to Netflix for its fourth season. If Longmire ever goes to meet his maker, as they say in Westerns, he'll be face-to-face with today's guest. Greg Johnson is an author and playwright currently living on a ranch in Wyoming. The Longmire books include Dry Bones, which will be officially released next week. Previous books in the series have received some honors, including many accolades for the French language edition of The Cold Dish. Greg Johnson, pleasure to have you on the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So where in you did Walt Longmire come from?
Oh, you know what? My wife has the best response about that. She says that Walt Longmire is who Craig would like to be in 10 years. It's just that he's off to an incredibly slow start. And there's probably more truth to that than I'm willing to admit. I don't know. I mean, whenever you're writing a character first person, you know, you can't help but, you know, have that character be a little bit like yourself. But I don't know. Walt's got a lot of attributes and qualities like that I wish I had. But I haven't quite gotten there yet.
Over time, does he surprise you? We've talked to a fair number of writers here who will tell us about their creations sort of moving away independently of them at some point.
Well, it's in some ways. Like, I don't know about you, but it worries me whenever, like, people who sit in rooms, you know, by themselves talk about voices and, you know, and you know, their characters going away and doing things on their own. You know, I don't know. I think what that is just your subconscious mind that's part of the writing process. And all it is, you know, it's like a backseat driver. You know, while your conscious mind is writing the book, your subconscious is back there working away, too, like any other backseat driver, continually throws things over the seat to make things a little bit more interesting. But and then I've also got, you know, the TV version of my books, which, you know, attempts to intrude, you know, in that world a little bit periodically, too.
So you're certainly old enough to remember John Wayne and his Westerns. Did you watch a lot of stuff like that growing up?
Oh, absolutely. My grandfather was a blacksmith, you know, and you know, I've been around horses my whole life, cowboyed, rodeoed, and did all that foolishness like it. And, you know, used to think that I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and now I think I'm barely 6 feet tall and, you know, and bullet resistant like that. But, you know, I think that, you know, whenever you're writing a book that, you know, takes place in two major genres, you know, whether it be crime fiction or Westerns, you know, you're coming to that, you know, with a lot of baggage. Like, and I think that, you know, the reason I decided to do the books that I did was I wanted to do a little bit of an homage, you know, to all those great Westerns and all those great characters, you know, the Gene Autrys and the Roy Rogers and all those characters, you know, that, you know, were so impacting on so many generations. And, you know, for me, a lot of it started off with about, you know, I guess 12 years ago or so. That was right when the CSI stuff was really kind of exploding all over the place. And everything was about the ballistics and the forensics and the scientific aspects of crime detection. And I happened to ask a DCI investigator here in Wyoming, where we have only one crime lab down in Cheyenne. It's about, you know, 7 hours away. And I said, how long does it take you guys to get DNA evidence? And he paused for a second, and he says, is this a high-profile case? And I said, yeah. And he goes, about 9 months. And so I said, well, I don't think what they're doing on TV and in these books is particularly honest then, is it? And he goes, no, it's not. And so what I decided to do was do a procedural that took place, you know, in the modern West, and being in the lowest populated county and the least populated state in America, which would be Wyoming.
Really, 9 months to get the results back?
Yeah, it's kind of backlogged, and I think, you know, what a lot of people forget is that, you know, these shows that you watch are, you know, all kind of based out of New York and L.A. and Chicago, and of course they have a lot more money and a lot more technological advancements, you know, than say a rural county, you know, in Wyoming, and Oregon is the same way. I spend an awful lot of time, you know, in Oregon. In this particular tour, I'm going to hit Oregon twice. You know, I fly in on the national tour and do Powell's like that, and then I've got a motorcycle tour that I do. After I finish up with the national tour, I jump on my motorcycle, which gets about 70 miles to the gallon like that, and I hit all the little independent bookstores up through Montana and Idaho and Washington, Oregon, Utah, and make it back into Wyoming. And in that one, I actually, let's see, I'm trying to think which all places I go to. I think I go to Sun River. I go to Redmond. Sun River's on the regular tour. Like, my wife is just handing
right, yeah, yeah. Those. I noticed you'll be back in June. Let me see.
But, yeah, I even do an event in Burns and Baker City. So, you know, I know Oregon pretty well. And that High Plains area of Oregon reminds me a great deal of Wyoming. And, you know, it's easy to see why it is that the character would be as popular as he is in Oregon.
I noticed that you are hitting. Let's give the list as long as we were talking about it. You're going to be at Sun River Books and Music in Sun River on the 15th at 5:30. Powell's Books in Beaverton.
Yep.
At 2 on the 16th, and then back in Oregon in June, it looks like. So June 21st in Sisters, June 21st later in the day, 2 hours later in Redmond. You got a busy day there.
I know. Like, at least I get to spend the night in one place.
And then Burns and Baker City on the 22nd and 23rd of June.
It's fun. Like that, and it's about a 5,000-mile loop on the motorcycle, but, you know, it's beautiful territory. You know, it's gorgeous, you know, to go up through the Northwest and, you know, and swing back into Wyoming, like it, and you know, a lot of bookstores, you know, they write me from Kansas and Nebraska and say, "Why don't you ride your motorcycle down here?" And I don't answer them, you know. So,
but you know, I think that's part of what I gather is part of the attraction for a lot of people is like this sort of back end of the earth kind of feel that there is to Longmire, and people recognize the places they live in there. People in places like Burns and Redmond are going to say, "Hey, this is my place."
Oh gosh, yes. I mean, it's you know, that's one of the things, you know, that I think that, you know, using a fictitious county, which is, you know, I'm not, you know, the first guy to do that. I mean, Faulkner was pretty smart about that, but
that Yakutatoha, wasn't it?
Yeah, and for me, you know, the whole thing is that it gives you a kind of an opportunity to go after what, you know, what I guess Steinbeck used to call a universality of the human condition, you know, and so, you know, Absaroka County starts looking a lot like a lot of different counties, you know, within the United States, you know, in a lot of different states. And, you know, to me, that's one of the joys of it. Like, that is, you know, that recognition value that the readers can have with it. You know, I have people, you know, write me from Florida that say, you know, like, "Oh, you know, the grumpy ladies at the courthouse, you must have been to our courthouse." And I'm like, "Well, no, that's kind of a universal, the grumpy ladies at the courthouse, actually." So,
all right, well, we'll give the grumpy ladies at the courthouse a chance to call in while we take this break. We're going to come back and talk more with Craig Johnson. He is Longmire's daddy. Walt Longmire is the creation of Craig Johnson. Dry Bones, the latest Longmire mystery, due out next week on the bookshelves. And the fourth edition, or the fourth season of the TV show, coming to Netflix sometime later this year. We'll get specific on dates if we can. Craig Johnson, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You may join us by phone or email. We'll come back and talk more with him and with you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We are talking today about the fictional County Sheriff Walt Longmire on TV and in books. He is the creation of Craig Johnson, who's our guest today. Craig Johnson has written all the Longmire books and has acted as a consultant as well to the TV series moving from A&E to Netflix sometime later this year for a fourth season. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the creation of Walt Longmire by Craig Johnson. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760, email jx@jeffnet.org. I do love the fact that Longmire is the sheriff of Absaroka County, and let me set up why. You know, the whole state of Jefferson movement, the idea that there's this part of Oregon and California that is forgotten by its states and has sought to secede. We talked several years ago to the author of a book called Lost States about similar such movements, and there was an effort to create a state of Absaroka.
There was. And it was a period in time in the late 1930s where, if you know about the construction, basically, of Wyoming, like pretty much all of our state government is strung all along I-80 on the very southern portion,
right.
Of Wyoming. And, you know, it's where the capital is. It's where the university is, the prison, you know, the psychiatric hospital. Everything's all down there along I-80. Well, all the tax money in the 1930s was basically going to the southern part of the state. And so the northern part of the state decided they were going to secede. And they were going to take the Black Hills from South Dakota, the Northern Cheyenne, and the Crow Reservation from up in Montana and Yellowstone and become a little playground unto themselves. And the actual pronunciation for the term, which is a Crow word for themselves, which means the children of the long-beaked bird, is Absaroka. And I was talking to a good friend of mine, Marcus Red Thunder, who's one of the bases for one of the characters in the books, Henry. And I told him, I said, "I think I'm going to do a fictitious county, and I think I'm going to call it Absaroka County." And he paused for a second, and he says, "Is it mostly white people in this county?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." And he goes, "Then they would probably mispronounce it and call it Absaroka." And suddenly Absaroka County was born.
There it is. Lots of references to Shakespeare, especially in some of your book titles. Are you a voracious reader of Shakespeare?
I am. Like, I mean, there are just, you know, writers. I mean, the great thing that I think Robert Shaw, you know, or George Bernard Shaw, rather, wrote about Shakespeare was that he was so good he wanted to dig him up and throw rocks at him. And you know, for me, one of the key elements of, you know, developing the character of Walt, you know, in the books was that I kind of wanted him to be a little bit different, you know, from a lot of the protagonists that you see in crime fiction, you know, which are the 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal. Every woman wanted him, every man feared him, and he could kill anyone with a #2 Ticonderoga pencil in 3.2 seconds. You know, it's the kind of character that I hate more than any other. You know, and Walt, you know, he's what I tend to refer to as over. He's overweight. He's overage. He's overly depressed, but he still gets up in the morning and tries to do the job. And one of the elements that I thought that I could give him, you know, to have him have a little bit of a secret weapon is the fact that he reads. He's a voracious reader, and he retains, you know, a lot of the information that he has. I mean, there's one point in time in the last book, you know, where he's conveying some piece of information to this group of sheriffs, and one of them looks at Lucian Connolly, the old sheriff of Absaroka County, and says, "Has he always been like this?" And Lucian nods his head and says, "Yep, better than a bookmobile." And you know, I think that's another one of the elements, I think, that makes Walt have an empathetic quality to, you know, the people that read the books, because, you know, they read books too. And so there's a reason why Walt's office is in an old abandoned Carnegie library, why it is that, you know, Walt's always got a book with him when he's traveling. And it's just one of those things, I think, that makes him a little bit more interesting.
You know, the powers of observation that have to be brought to bear by any writer, I've noticed, are very strong. I wonder, though, if that tends to go with a personality type, introvert, extrovert. I mean, it sounds like you get to know people pretty well.
You do, like that, but it's part of the job, you know, noticing things. That's where, you know, being an author is a lot like, you know, being a police officer, in the sense that, you know, you're not going to survive long if you don't note, you know, all those little details, you know, whether the devil be there or not. You know, that's what's going to make a book, you know, real. And, you know, and for me, you know, one of the things that I write about is I'm writing about the High Plains area, you know, of northern Wyoming. And so, you know, I need to be, you know, extraordinarily honest about it and try and be as, you know, truthful about it as I can possibly be, which means I can't write the books, you know, as a travelogue and make it all beautiful and perfect, or, you know, as David Mamet used to refer to it, the land of the happy village. You know, I mean, I have to put the scars and the warts and everything else in there, too. But it's also a question of, you know, not only Wyoming, but a question of, you know, what is actual sheriffing like? It's a different form of law enforcement. Whenever I'm touring overseas, like that, I'm always trying to explain, you know, exactly what a sheriff is, you know, that it's an elected law enforcement official, which is very strange for the Europeans. They don't seem to understand, you know, what that is, where you have to be part policeman and part politician. And, you know, and then also, you know, all the utilization of all the spirituality like that in the culture and society of the Northern Cheyenne. You know, it's very important. You know, those people are my neighbors. They're my friends. And it's important that I make sure that I get all of the aspects, you know, of that I use in my books, that I get it right.
We're talking to Craig Johnson here on the Jefferson Exchange, the creator of the Walt Longmire character, now in nearly a dozen books. And the TV series moves from A&E to Netflix this fall. Debbie in Talent sends an email. She says, "The Longmire character reminds me of Marshal Matt Dillon on the Gunsmoke series that our family watched faithfully in the late 50s and early 60s. Since you were born in 1961, she's been doing her research. It's unlikely you saw those. Were there any characters...
Are you kidding? You had to see Gunsmoke. You had to be from another planet. Do you remember how... It's still in reruns.
It went on to like 1970 anyway, didn't it?
I think it goes on forever. Like that. So, but yeah, I remember watching Gunsmoke. Like that. And I think what it is that, you know, with Walt, you know, with Walt, he does have a code, you know, that he operates by. And I think, you know, obviously I borrowed a great deal, you know, from a lot of those TV series, like at, and the movies and everything. I mean, you know, there was a period in time, like at, I think, you know, in the post-war era after World War II, where we kind of inundated the rest of the world, you know, with all of our, you know, with the movies, with the books, and later on with the television. And at one point in time, there were almost 100 Westerns, you know, on television. So, you know, that was the strongest, you know, art form, you know, that we were, you know, producing and, you know, shipping overseas. And I think it's had a large-scale effect on the imagery that, you know, not only people have in this country, but also all over the world. And, you know, I think that, you know, that a lot of the things that those individuals stood for, they all those TV cowboys, they all had, you know, these codes that they lived by, the cowboy code, like that. And a lot of those codes, you know, they're still pretty good codes today, you know, that you can, you know, utilize in your day-to-day life. And, you know, we've kind of gone through that, you know, anti-hero period, you know, from the 60s, you know, and it's kind of hyper-accelerated here in the last couple of decades to the point where it's sometimes difficult to tell the good guys from the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of nice, like, to have a guy who, you know, does live by a code and does stand and, and cover the ground that he, you know, he stands on, as my grandfather used to say.
The Debbie and Talon's question went on. You already answered about John Wayne, but she also asks about Andy Griffith and says, not Barney Fife, I'm guessing, for an influence.
Well, one of the things about Walt is that he does have a sense of humor. You know, that's, you know, the other, you know, secret weapon that I gave him. I mean, you know, for me, that was kind of one of the essential aspects. Whenever I'm doing, you know, writing classes or teaching and working with young writers, you know, they'll often ask me, they'll say, well, how do you get people to, you know, to sympathize, you know, with your characters? How do you get them to empathize with them and, you know, and really, you know, bring them into, you know, into their lives and their thoughts? And, you know, one of the first things I'm always saying is give them a sense of humor, you know, give the characters a sense of humor. You know, who do you like to hang out with? Who do you like to spend time with? You know, people that make you laugh. And, you know, I get a lot of emails and a lot of cards and phone calls and everything from a lot of people in law enforcement, you know, whether they be highway patrolmen or they be sheriffs or sheriff's deputies or chiefs of police, like that, or patrolmen or whatever like that. And one of the things they consistently say is that it's the sense of humor that they enjoy the most. I mean, anybody that's ever had a difficult job knows that the only way that you're going to get through the day is by having a sense of humor. I mean, you get to the end of the day, you either laugh or you cry, and laughing is a much better alternative.
Craig Johnson's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the creator of the Longmire series of books and the TV series that is based upon those books, followed from that. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the creation and the whole process. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. I'm trying to keep track. Are there 11 books now? Total?
There are. You did very well. Like that, there are 11 books. Like that, and then there's also two other pieces. Like that, there's actually a novella that was the One Book Wyoming, the first state read for the state of Wyoming, which is a little novella called Spirit of Steamboat that came out about 2 years ago. Like that, and then there's also a collection of short stories called Wait for Signs. Like that was out last year.
You know, we were talking about the exporting of American culture at the peak of the Westerns, and it got me to thinking about some of the non-American authors who picked up the Western genre, including that German author whose name, because Carl May, was it?
Yeah, and they have May festivals over there where they have Wild West festivals all their own. But you kind of got to give credit also to, you know, the guy that came along before all of that media came along. There was this guy by the name of Buffalo Bill Cody, who did all of those Wild West shows all over the world. And I really do think that he did an amazing job of, you know, planting the seeds of that, you know, that imagery that the world has of that epic romantic American West that everybody seems to hold. I think he doesn't get quite the credit, I think, that he probably deserves.
There is quite a range within Westerns too, though, and I noticed that you know, it ranges from the people who are the really good, you know, the good-hearted sheriff, the tough guy, all that stuff, right down to the recent, was it just last year, the 100 Ways to Die in the West, or whatever it
right.
was.
Right.
Which is quite vulgar because it was a Seth MacFarlane production.
Right. Like, I think Adam Sandler's just gotten into a lot of trouble like that for a lot of the derogatory Native American remarks.
Oh, that's right. They left the set one day, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, and I can understand that. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, that it is such a powerful genre and that it has been around. I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of lampooning. There's going to be a lot of, like, satire and a lot of those type of things like that. But you can do that, you know, with a sense of respect. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly no expert on this, but anybody who was looking for intellectual content in Adam Sandler movies is probably going to be a little bit disappointed anyway. So.
Could well be. Curiously enough, you did not move to the West, I understand, Craig, until your 20s. Tell us where you came from and what brought you out West.
Well, I've got family pretty much, you know, all over the country. And I guess, you know, basically, you know, I was from the East, look at, and then... you know, went away to college, like that, and then once I graduated from college, just threw a backpack up on my back, like that, and you know, hauled it over and threw it in an old 60 model half ton pickup truck, and that was kind of the period where I was doing a lot of ranch work, like that, and a lot of rodeo, and just traveled around all over the West, you know, just, you know, spending time, like that. It was kind of a Jack Kerouac self realization period, you know, where I thought, you know, okay, if I bounce off enough stuff, you know, maybe someday, you know, I'll be able to do what it is that I really want to do, which is, you know, write novels. I really wanted to be a writer. But I felt like there was an awful lot out there in the world that I needed to go and, maybe inspect and be a part of, you know, before I attempted that first novel. I think that, you know, that's the difficulty, I think, with a lot of young authors. They go to these wonderful writing schools, and they get all these marvelous tools to be able to write, but then they graduate, and they want to write novels about writing students in writing programs, writing novels about writing students. I don't know about you, but I don't want to read that, you know, so... For me, it was a question of going out and, you know, and just kind of finding what it is that, you know, I wanted to write. And, you know, it just seemed like the contemporary American West is a wonderful place to write about. I mean, it's you know, wilder now than it ever was in that Wild West period that everybody seems to think, you know, was an epic, you know, romantic period. And so I see the West now as being one of the most epic and romantic places in the world. I wake up, you know, at the foot of the Bighorn Mountains here in northern Wyoming, at the confluence of Clear and Piney Creeks, and the nearest town to where my ranch is has a population of 25.
You cross Wyoming.
Like, and so for me, you know, I kind of draw, you know, from, you know, sinking my roots in, you know, and actually having been in the same place for almost 25 years now. And it's kind of funny like that, because I was actually signing books. I was hauling books over into the front of the Busy Bee Cafe, which actually does exist in the main street of Buffalo. And there was an old rancher sitting there with a book like that. And I said, are you waiting? And he goes, yeah. He says, I think that fella's going to come over here and sign some of his books. He said, but I don't know if he's going to make it or not, because I think he moved. He got a big TV show, and he's on the New York Times bestsellers list. So I think he moved over to Jackson or out to California or something like that. And I sat down and picked up his book and said, well, no, he hasn't, because I'm him. Like, I sat there and signed his books. Okay, but, you know, for me, I don't see myself ever going anywhere. I mean, this is my home. And, you know, I enjoy it, you know, a great deal, you know, drawing from Walt's world, you know.
What makes you say, Craig, that the West is wilder now than it was?
You know, well, I think you can pretty much do a body count, you know, on any given week, you know, here in the American West, you know, and in a lot of the cities, and put it all together, and you'll see that, like, you know, we've got more people dying in a week than they had in the American West, you know, in a year's period in time. And you can say, well, of course, you know, we have a lot, you know, larger population base, you know, for that. But I don't know. It's just a lot more complex, you know, period in time. I mean, I'd love to see Roy Rogers write a song about kicking a door open, you know, of a crack house. But I don't, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see that. So.
Probably not. Craig Johnson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the creator of the Longmire series of books, which has led to the creation of a TV series as well. Here's Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning. Little old me, 74 years old, visually bad. Got the talking books on cassettes now, you know, everything from... Have you ever had the chance to, well, pick who reads those, you know, your books, and... Do you use the same message come through those guys?
In other words, is the book as good read as it is?
I'm wondering whether the feeling that he had when he wrote it comes through in somebody else's voice. If we're getting the same message, I guess I mean.
All right, let's find out. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Craig?
Yeah, Jim, I think you are like that. But I was also kind of, you know, lucky in the sense that there was this fellow by the name of, another mystery author you probably never heard of, a fellow by the name of Tony Hillerman, and you know, and that was a joke. Look at, and
yeah.
And Tony,
okay,
was very sweet. Look at, and wrote some blurbs for my early books, and I was in negotiation for the audio versions of my books. Whenever, you know, I first met Tony, looked at, and he overheard a little bit of a phone call there, and he said, well, if you can get George Guidel, get George, because he's really fantastic as a reader, like that, and see if you can get him. And so whenever, you know, audio, like that, you know, recorded books, and everybody wanted to, you know, do the books, they said, well, we've got a couple of different people we're thinking about having read the books, and they said, you know, one's George Guidel, and I said, him. And they said, well, are you sure you don't want to hear the others? And I said, no, if he's good enough for Tony Hillerman, he's good enough for me. And it's kind of a wonderful relationship, because I get to talk with George, you know, before the books come out, and, you know, we have a nice conversation. I remember the first time I was speaking with him, you know, we were talking about pronunciations with the Northern Cheyenne and the Basque, you know, and place names and all this type of stuff. And I said, well, a lot of people are really excited about this. And I remember George's response was, why? And I said, well, you don't live in the West, you know. Out of here, you know, when we've got an 8-hour drive, you know, and we're trying to get across, you know, going, you know, all the way from Salem over to, like, say, Baker City, like that. It's kind of nice to have an audiobook, I got to tell you, like that. And it really doesn't. It's a marriage made in heaven, like that. Because I mean, you can have a good book, but if you don't have a good reader, you know, you're not going to have a good experience as far as that recording is concerned. And I'm very fortunate to have George Guidel. Like, I did do a dirty trick to him. I can tell you that. I was talking with him, I think it was the fourth book, in Another Man's Moccasins. We were just talking, and I said, well, you know, you have such a wonderful speaking voice. You must have an incredible singing voice. And he said, oh, no, I don't. I have a horrible singing voice. I don't sing at all. Like that. Well, in the next book, you know, Walt's in a motel, and they're playing the radio next door really, really loud. And so instead of, you know, Walt, you know, wouldn't be the kind to bang on the wall, instead he started singing along with Eddie Arnold's Cattle Call at full voice. And soon as George read that, he called me up on the phone and said, you rat. And I said, what, George? And he says, for four books, you don't have Walt sing. As soon as I tell you I don't sing, that's when you have him start singing. And so he's kind of held it against me ever since that particular book.
God, I can understand that. So at what age did you begin to write material that eventually turned into novels?
The very first novel that I wrote, you know, was The Cold Dish. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't an easy process because I think I made the mistake that a lot of young authors make in the sense that, you know, I wrote it about 650 pages long. It was like War and Peace in Absaroka County was what it was like. And I, you know, wrote it, and it got picked up by a big agent there in New York, and she passed it over to the president of Penguin USA, Catherine Court, and she took it, I remember sitting there with her and her saying, we would like some more of these. And I said, well, I'm happy to write some more books for you. And she said, no, I think we want some more of these. And that's where I tried to argue with the president of Penguin USA, saying I didn't think that would work. And thank goodness I did.
Yeah, I want to get to the other end of that conversation on the other side of this break. Craig Johnson's our guest, the creator of Walt Longmire and the 11 Longmire books, which led to the Longmire TV series coming up on its fourth season approaching. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with Craig and take phone calls and emails from you if you'd like to join us in a minute 10. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the fiction writer Craig Johnson, known for Walt Longmire, the fictional sheriff of fictional Absaroka County, Wyoming, now in 11 books, including one coming out next week called Dry Bones, another Longmire mystery. It's led to a TV series that spent three seasons on A&E and moves to Netflix later this year. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Craig's process and his character, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, so the Penguin boss said we'd like another book, and you said sure, but they said no, another Longmire book, and your response was no?
Well, my response was, I kind of set myself up for writing. I mean, the first one, The Cold Dish, was just a standalone novel. It never even occurred to me to think of writing a series of books. And so, you know, my response was, I've got some other ideas I want to bounce off of you. And her response was, well, why don't you go back to your ranch in Wyoming and sit down and think about this? And so here I am, this author who's never even had a single book published, arguing with the president of Penguin USA about trying to write a series of books. And so anyway, thank goodness, you know, because the emails, you know, come in every day, from people who, you know, enjoy the fact that, you know, that there are, you know, more of these books. And I'm enjoying it, too. I have to admit that, you know, I stumbled onto a character that I really just enjoy his company. He's just a good guy. You know, he's decent and he's kind and he cares. He's smart. He's funny. You know, he's maybe all the things that I wish I was, but I'm not.
The story that started it all in The Cold Dish, well, with that title, it's got to be about revenge, starts with the rape of a Native American girl and a series of murders that follow. Was there anything about this story that came from headlines or things that had actually happened around you in Wyoming?
Oh, yeah, there was. But I actually took it from New Jersey, believe it or not. There was the Glen Ridge rape case that took place in New Jersey, and there was a young woman who was mentally handicapped who was taken advantage of by these four high school football players, it was kind of a difficult situation I think one of the difficulties in trying to write crime fiction is that you really have to understand, you know, all of the characters. You have to be able to sit in all of the chairs and be all of those characters. And so that means that you're going to have to understand why it is, you know, that a murderer would actually be pushed to the point where, you know, they would do something drastic, you know, somebody who's really been pushed to a situation. And I just I remember watching, you know, the videos of the father of that, you know, young girl, and you know, how those guys basically, you know, a lot of them got off, you know, with suspended sentences. And I just thought, you know, boy, I can kind of understand how, you know, you might be able to push yourself to a point where you do something drastic. And so in understanding, you know, the antagonist in the storyline, it seemed like I was going to be able to come up with the protagonists in the story. And that's how Walt Longmire was born.
You wrote or said in another interview, I can always tell when somebody is writing crime fiction that's never been around cops before. And I understand Sheriff Larry Kirkpatrick has a lot to do with your education.
He does. Like, one of the great things, you know, of being where I am and doing what I do, I have all of these sheriffs, like, who are, you know, really fantastic. And a lot of them are retired sheriffs. And those are the ones that will tell you the really good stories, you know. A lot of times, like that, you know, they come up with stuff that I include in the books every single time. And every single time somebody writes me and says, you know, there's no way that story on page 157 could ever happen, I always have to say, well, let me introduce you to Sheriff Goody Pickering of Bighorn County, Montana, and he'll be happy to tell you that whole story. But, you know, for me, these guys have some incredible stories to tell, and I try and utilize as much of them as I possibly can. I mean, most of the stories that I write tend to have a springboard from newspaper articles. When I'm traveling around the state here in Wyoming and up Montana and over in South Dakota and everywhere, I always pick up newspaper articles, you know, because truth is stranger than fiction. It makes the books kind of grounded in the American West. I mean, I don't really want Walt on a cruise ship. I don't want Walt, you know, on a skateboard. I don't want any of that stuff. Like, I really want him dealing with the things that actual sheriffs deal with. And so for me, that's, you know, that's an important part of the process.
The cruise ship thing, it's an amazing image. I just can't imagine Walt sitting around the pool with a drink with a little umbrella in it, you know?
No, I really can't either, no. That might be Walt's idea of hell, I think.
It could be. The you mentioned living close to the Northern Cheyenne and Crow reservations. Have you consulted friends a lot about the relationships between the white and Native characters in the book?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, that's an important part of the storyline. I mean, the friendship between Henry and Walt, it was in the first book and then continues to be, you know, one of the hallmarks of not only the, you know, each book but the series as well. And, you know, and that's, you know, important to me because, you know, though I'm close to the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow Reservation, I'm not Crow or Northern Cheyenne. So it's very important, you know, that I make sure that I get those, you know, points correct. And so thank goodness I've got, you know, a lot of friends, you know, and even close to being family, like that up on the res. And they're able to provide, you know, a lot of the information, a lot of the perspective that, you know, maybe I wouldn't be able to get if I wasn't here in the immediate vicinity.
How many of the books, Craig, were published by the time there was any interest that came your way about developing a TV show?
Seven of them. I had seven books published, like, and we actually did make it on the New York Times bestsellers list the year before Longmire got, you know, picked up and kind of moved in that direction. Warner Brothers got in touch with me, and these wonderful producers like that I was able to, you know, talk with before, you know, I signed any kind of, you know, contracts or anything like that. Greer Shepherd and Hunt Baldwin, John Coveney, like a really good group of folks. Look at, and you know, they really seemed to understand the material. They really wanted to do something different, you know, from all the stuff that was on television right now. And you know, I had only one, you know, one cross swords with them there at the very beginning when they said, you know, well, we're thinking about making Walt and Henry about 10 years younger than they are in the books. And I had the immediate, you know, redneck cowboy author response where I was like, well, now why are we doing that? And they said, well, because we'd really like this TV show to run for about 10 years, and we'd rather not have Walt and Henry on walkers by the time we get to the end of the run. And I had a hard time arguing that one, so that was the end of that. You know, they became a little bit younger. And it was even to the process where they made me a creative consultant on the TV show and sent me the DVDs of the actors that they were considering for the different roles. And it's been an interesting process. It really has.
Well, I was going to ask you about the creative consultant nature of things. Obviously, deals can get structured a lot of different ways. So you essentially signed over some control over the characters in the TV version. Is that what happened?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's like any other kind of business, you know, ranching or anything else like that. I think, you know, you always try and work with the very best people that you can. You do as much research as you can, try and get the best people, and then, you know, work with them. And then you do the hardest thing, which is leave them alone. You know, let them do what they do. I mean, you know, the people that were involved, you know, with our show are the people that were involved with The Closer and Nip Tuck, you know, all of these really successful TV shows. Well, I'm a cowboy in a town of 25. I don't think I know too much about television production. So the one thing I'm able to do is I'm able to read the scripts. What they do is they send me the scripts, and I go through them and then, you know, give them a response to it. You know, if they've got some things wrong, like I'll try and make sure that they get them squared away.
But, like, Walt wouldn't say this, that kind of
thing. Yeah, or, you know, yeah, Walt's going to run down to Denver and be back in an hour. You know, now that's going to be about 12, 13 hours is what that's going to be. So, you know, little things like that, or jurisdictional applications, you know, of what a sheriff's able to do on the reservation. situation and what he's not able to do, little things like that. But they're great. They're just great people to work with. You know, the actors are fantastic. You know, we've even got a little event up here in Buffalo, Wyoming, a town of 4,000 people, where we have the entire cast of Longmire come up for Longmire Days.
I noticed that in Buffalo.
17th, 18th, and 19th of July. You can come see, you know, all of your favorite actors in Longmire and 12,000 of their closest friends.
I think I just got an idea for a birthday present for my wife on July 19th.
There you go.
She's the big Longmire fan. Oh, that's amazing. So talk about the hiring of Robert Taylor, this Australian actor.
It was funny because they asked me, they said, well, do you ever think about any actors whenever you think about Walt Longmire? And I said, well, no, I really don't. I've got friends and family and people I work with, and all of those people are the ones that I utilize as characters in my books. And they said, well, if you were to think of actors, you know, for Walt Longmire, who would you want to, you know, think about? And I said, well, you know, Joel McRae, you know, Ben Johnson, you know, Gary Cooper. And they said that was no help at all because all those guys had been dead for 40 years. So I said, well, I'm not going to be much help to you guys like that. And so one of the other big issues that they had was they wanted to know why it was Walt was as big as he is in the books, because in the books, Walt's, you know, about 6'5". He's a big guy like it. And the reason I did that was I really didn't want him to be one of these Navy SEAL studied, you know, kind of characters. I wanted him to just be big because I wanted him to be durable, because I, you know, the things I did to him in that first novel, The Cold Dish, you know, he had to kind of stand up to it. And so he's a big guy like it. And I said, you know what, majority of Western sheriffs tend to be big guys because it just makes the job a lot easier. And then I made the joke and said that it really doesn't matter anyway because everybody in Hollywood is 5'5", so it really doesn't matter. And they didn't think that was very funny at all. And so then when they sent me the DVDs and I was going through them, I got to the last one and it said Robert Taylor. And I thought, well, they took my advice after all. But they had scribbled on the bottom of the envelope, he's 6'3". Nah, 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 nah. And so there were some things I really liked about him right off the bat. I mean, the great thing about Robert is that, you know, he's got that – that really, you know, deep, you know, really wonderful voice. Look at, he's a big guy. Look at, he's got lines on his face. He looks like he's got mileage on him. Like, I mean, that's the great thing about him. And so, you know, I really was, you know, pulling for, you know, for him. You know, my wife and I are sitting there in the kitchen table watching the DVD with his audition, you know, and I'm really pulling for Walt Longmire and really pulling for Robert Taylor at that point. And that was about then that my wife said, oh, my. And I turned around and looked at her, and she goes, he's handsome. And, you know, and I looked at her and I looked at him and she says, he's kind of like a TV version of you, taller, better looking, with a better voice. So I'm not as big of a Robert Taylor fan as maybe I used to be. I don't know.
Just after that particular encounter. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, I think, in a previous interview, being in Hollywood and seeing some giganto Longmire poster on a building or something. What was that like?
That was very strange. Like, it's, you know, that was a period in time, you know, whenever the show was coming out, and there were billboards all over, you know, and there were buses, you know, with Walt's face going by. And I was doing an event on Sunset Boulevard, like, and across the street there was actually a 20-story Walt Longmire looking down at me as I'm reading from the book. You know, there's a certain point where it all becomes kind of surreal. And, you know, that maybe is where it is that I have a little bit of an advantage by being in a town of 25. It's really hard for the advertising to reach me here, so...
I understand Longmire was the most successful scripted series in the history of the A&E network, and yet A&E punched it out after 3 seasons, and now it's ending up on Netflix. That must have been a surprise.
Yeah, I've, you know, with my brief amount of experience, you know, with Hollywood, I've learned that you never underestimate the intelligence of some television executives, and this was a situation where, you know, it was kind of silly like that, but, you know, they wanted to own the show. A&E wanted to own the show, and Warner Brothers wouldn't give it to them like that. And so they decided, all right, then, well, we're just going to kill the show. And, you know, Warner was, you know, pretty great about it, you know, and went out and shopped it to a bunch of different networks. And Netflix jumped right in with both feet and said, look, we've already got the first 3 episodes, and we're screening those. We'll be happy to take this on and go on ahead, you know, with a 4th episode and hopefully some others. And so they were pretty fantastic to work with so far. They're kind of great.
I've been an intermittent viewer, I admit, but I did see the cliffhanger at the end of season 3, and I'm sure I'm not the only person in America who uttered the words, what the? Without giving
anything. For all I know, you may be one of those spies for Warner Brothers that I had to sign a contract with saying that I would not divulge any kind of plot spoilers about the end of season 3. So I am not able to talk about that, my friend.
No, and I knew you couldn't, but the question then is, so I mean, has the TV show taken some turns that were a bit unexpected for you?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing like that, but it's a different kind of, you know, art form. I mean, it's a totally different deal. Like, you know, what makes for a really good book might not, you know, necessarily make, you know, for very good television, and vice versa. And one of the big limitations that they were facing, I think, you know, when it was on, you know, a cable television, was the fact that they were limited to a 42-minute format. That was all they could do, 42
right.
minutes, not 42 minutes and 30 seconds, not, you know,
yeah, because the commercial
42
breaks.
Minutes.
Right.
That was it. Yeah, for all those commercial breaks. Okay, and so that's really, you know, a short amount of time to try and tell a storyline. Like, for me, that's like haiku. You know, I mean, my books, you know, they're 350, 400 pages, like, and so I'm used to, you know, having a little bit more, you know, in-depth, like, at detail, like, at maybe taking a little bit more of my time in developing the storyline. But they don't have that luxury. And so, you know, they really have to hit it and hit it hard. And it's also so much more of a visual, you know, image that they use. Like, the ability to show all of those things, like that I'm writing about, you know, is a wonderful advantage for them. Like that, but then again, I've got a wonderful advantage. It's called the writer's, or rather, the reader's imagination. You know, that's what I tap into, like that, and it's a pretty great place to work too.
There's a great picture of you from the set with Robert Taylor's arm around you and Lou Diamond Phillips planting a kiss on your cheek. Which how much time do you spend at the set?
You know, those guys are a little odd sometimes, like it, but you know, what it is, they've got great senses of humor is what they do, and we're all just good friends. Like it's really kind of a unique situation. You know, I don't know if this is what happens, you know, in Hollywood all the time, but they really enjoy the books. They really enjoy, you know, the show. They know that they're doing something that's a little different, and you know, for me, it's an incredible, you know, experience like that, because I've got limited experience, you know, with Hollywood, but I think I'm utterly spoiled now like that, because you know, I you know, there was a, to give you an indication of what kind of people they are, like that, I wrote the commencement speech, you know, for the Lame Deer High School on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation this last year, and normally they don't ask, you know, outsiders from the tribe to do that, and I did, and the problem was, is they told me when it was that they were going to have me do the speech, and it was when I was on a book tour, so I couldn't do it, and so they were disappointed, I was disappointed. And I think it was like maybe 2 weeks later, I was down on the set, and Lou Diamond Phillips asked me, he said, you know, what's going on in the res? And I said, well, I wrote this commencement speech, but I can't deliver it. He flew up to Lame Deer, Montana, and delivered the speech for me.
Wow, that's just great. Okay, Dry Bones is the newest Longmire mystery, due out next week. Craig Johnson will be in Sun River on May 15th, Beaverton on the 16th, and let me see, what were the other June dates? Back in Oregon, in Central Oregon generally, and out to Baker City in June. Craig Johnson, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You bet. I'll just be circling around Oregon, so if you see my red motorcycle, just flag me down.
We'll snag you. Thanks so much.